We practice the practice right now. That's what's wrong with most of our athletes today. We don't practice to be great. We don't practice to be dominant. We practice to practice. What do you mean by that, Prime? I'm glad you asked. We practice counting the number of periods. We practice understanding how much time we got left. We practice just to get through practice. We cutting deals in practice. You go soft, I go soft. We don't practice to be dominant. When I ask you, what was your purpose of practice? You ain't got no answer for me. I'm gonna ask you, what is your purpose of practice? I don't care if you practice at work. I don't care if you practice with your relationship. I don't care if you practice in any endeavor you choose to do. What is your purpose for practice? I practiced to be the best ever. So every time I walked on that field, I had a purpose for my practice.
Wow, I tell you what, we practice to practice, we don't practice to be great. You know, we're going to be talking about what it means to be great and how when we practice with a certain purpose in mind, there is actually greatness that begins to happen. And we're going to be looking at what it means to be great when it comes to the way that we serve others, the way that we sacrifice ourselves, we sacrifice our resources. And really, we're going to get to the question this weekend of why does serving develop a strong life? Why does serving develop a strong life, and how does that lead to actually us feeling a sense and experiencing a greatness? So, man, really excited you're here this weekend. And my name's Kurt, if we haven't had a chance to meet. Those of you tuning in online, man, it's so good to have the hundreds of you all over the state and the region and even the country tuning in with us this weekend. And if you're here for the first time, whether you're online or in the room, man, so excited you're here. As we always say, we certainly hope it's not your last time. And so, you know, this time of year, I love, love, love. We're midway through this thing called the All Church Journey. We do this every single fall, different theme. And we get to about this point, we're week four, week five, we're making a turn toward the end, and it's November, and all of a sudden, you know, we're just like experiencing things, we're growing, God's like showing up in our lives in unique ways, and it's beginning to feel like it's about time for spread some cheer, you know what I'm saying? Take a look at this. All right, who's excited about spread some cheer this year? You guys excited about this? Yes, man. Tell you what, 14 years and running, we're going to be providing meals for hundreds of families all over the Indianapolis area, Christmas for families that otherwise may not have a good Christmas. And I tell you what, the generosity that just flows out of you as we head in this season is just palpable. I mean, it's amazing. So, so love this season. So we're going to talk about how we live that kind of life, that generous life. Let me pray for us before we jump into that, though. God, thank you for the chance to be here right now. We're excited to be here. We're going after you. We're pursuing you. We're all at different places, and you meet us uniquely in that place. And this weekend, I just pray that you would teach us. We want to take a look at a core character trait of yours that we don't do very well, this idea of sacrifice and surrender. And so God, just teach us what that looks like and help us to see how you invite us into this enterprise that you're doing in the world. And we just pray these things according to your character, Jesus. Amen. You know, there's this guy that we like to talk a lot about around here called the Apostle Paul. And the Apostle Paul wrote more than half of the New Testament portion of the Bible. And so Paul, you know, if you're somebody who's like, you know, Kurt, I'm kind of new to church, still figuring out if I'm into God, into Jesus, kind of get annoyed by Christians, not really sure I like Christians, you're going to like the Apostle Paul. That's pretty much his story, at least the early part of his life. He was annoyed with Christians. He actually hated Christians. He was arresting them. He was coming against the initiative of Jesus and trying to kind of squelch it. And then one day he discovered that everything he understood about Jesus was really not accurate. It had all these religious, you know, hoops and different things he had kind of transferred over from his religious life. And one day he just came into relationship with the authentic real Jesus, the real person of Jesus, and realized what his grace is like, his character is like, and he did like an about face. And from that day forward, he began following Jesus. And so we find later in his life, he writes these letters. And he writes these letters to Christians all around the Mediterranean rim. These are new Christians, people new in their faith. He's coaching them. He's mentoring them in what it means to have a strong life, what it means to be a follower of Jesus and to serve, to surrender. And he equates it to something that is a bit unique for us. It's a kind of a metaphor that we don't always get in our world today. It's very real for them then, but it was to that of being a soldier. Now, here's how he writes about this in 2 Timothy chapter 2. He says, endure suffering along with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. Soldiers don't get tied up in the affairs of civilian life, for they cannot please the officer who enlisted them. So he's saying soldiers, you know, when you're a soldier, you bend your life toward the initiative of your commanding officer. And because you can't get involved in other things, otherwise you're not going to please your commanding officer. He said, being a follower of Jesus is the same way. In fact, in another letter that he writes to Christians in this city called Philippi, he again gives kind of a picture of what it means to be enlisted in this initiative and to serve. In fact, here's what he says. He says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. We're going to come back to that phrase right there in a moment. Rather, in humility, value others above yourselves, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of the others. And then he goes on, in your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as that of Christ Jesus, who being the very nature of God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant. You know, that is hard to do right there. That is very hard to do. And I don't really like to think of myself as less than somebody. I don't know about you, but you know what pumps me up? What pumps me up is when I feel like I'm better than somebody, right? I mean, when you feel like, yeah, I perform better than they did, right? That's what pumps me up. That's what kind of energizes me. And so honestly, I struggle with this idea of, and I could put, you know, be like, oh yeah, I mean, everybody's more important than me and I'm gonna come underneath. And I've cultivated that in my life, but honestly, that's a very, very hard posture. I like being the best. In fact, it's Halloween weekend this weekend. It's a bit different than last year, right? We were in the midst of the COVID pandemic last year, and everybody was still kind of locked down on a lot of fronts. And our home, we were trying to figure out, how do we do trick-or-treating and be good neighbors and yet, you know, be available to kids that are coming by and yet keep distance and keep them safe? So came up with this fantastic idea where we developed these chutes from our second-story windows that shot candy down to kids on our driveway. It's amazing. It's lots of fun. And as we started putting this together, about hour 8 or 9 into the assembly of this project, it got dark the night before Halloween, and Julie, my wife, comes out. She says, Kurt, are you still working on this? And I'm like, I am, because if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right, and we're going to do it big. And so, you know, we just blew it out. I'm like, I want people coming by and this being a memorable moment. I want them going, that was the best experience in our neighborhood. I did not want to be the unmemorable neighbor. And so that's kind of how I define success. I want to be memorable. I want to be remembered. And I don't like to be the least. I don't like to be, you know, at the bottom. I don't care if it's March Madness or fantasy football, which, by the way, how many of you have already kind of bailed on your fantasy football team? Anybody just kind of like, yeah, I started strong and now I'm not really watching? Here's the standings from our league right here, and I'm in fifth place. Let me tell you why some of you have bailed on your fantasy football team. It's because you're losing. It's because you're losing. When you're at the bottom of that thing right there, you're like, I'm out. Because we don't like to see our name at the bottom, right? We don't like to see our name at the bottom of the list. It's humiliating. We feel a bit of shame. When we're at the top, let me tell you something. Nobody ever, I don't think in the history of fantasy football ever, has bailed on their team when they were at the top of the charts. You just don't do that because you like seeing your name at the top. It feels bad when you're last. And so again, the Apostle Paul right here, he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition, but have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being the very nature of God, meaning he was God. He could have said, hey, God, I'm here. I'm equal to you. He said, he did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself, and here's the word we struggle with right here. What's that word right there? Nothing. Because we want to be something, right? He made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. You know, nothing is pretty close to last. I mean, it's like the bottom, right? And if you, like me, like to be the best, you know, then Jesus, through Paul, is saying right here, we should be like him. And so, I mean, think about this. It's a little weird, right? I mean, if you're talking fantasy football, that's one thing. But you're talking about the God of the universe. You're talking about the most powerful force in the universe. In the military analogy, this would be the guy that is the leader. This would be the guy in charge. This would be the figure, the top guy, the general, the commanding officer. And basically, as he's recruiting people, he's saying, if you want to be a part of my army, a part of my initiative, a part of my enterprise, this thing we're doing in the world, guess what? You're going to have to follow my leadership. And as a result of that, if you want to be a part of it, you're going to have to lose. You're going to have to become less. You're going to have to surrender. You're going to have to do the white flag thing. You're going to have to get the white flag out and do this number, right? We don't like to do this. I mean, think about this. Even his entrance into the world. I mean, think about this. The way that God even entered the world. I mean, he showed up what? Not in a way anybody expected. Everybody expected him to come as a strong force, expected him to come in, you know, on some chariot or some, you know, turning heads and taking names, taking prisoners. And what does he do? He disappoints all of them because he comes in as a kid, a baby, the least, the last. So three things this weekend on why serving makes us stronger. Why does serving make us stronger? Well, the first one is it's actually the fact that Jesus came to serve us first. Think about that. I mean, Jesus didn't initially come and say, hey, you need to start serving. No, Jesus came and he simply just served us. He did what every great leader does. He never asked us to do anything that he hasn't already done. And so, you know, this whole paradox of if we want to be great, we have to actually be less. And, you know, if we want to be the best, Jesus, like, it's not how it works. You don't, like, go to the top and be the best. And I find a little comfort, I don't know if you do, but I find a little comfort from this story, you know, that Jesus had, this encounter he had with some of his friends, because I feel like they're a lot like me. I mean, think about this. They spent 3 years with him, and they're taking in all his teachings, and he's modeling and, you know, instructing and coaching them. And then all of a sudden, they just had this, like, brain fart moment. It's just like, whoa, I just totally missed it right there. Right? It's like they're doing good, and then all of a sudden they missed it. And I feel like I'm that way sometimes. Because core development, core strength, it actually takes time. It takes a long time to continue to develop. And in this story, we see these two guys, James and John, and they're Jesus' best friends. So there's a number of instances where it says Jesus, James, and John. This is like his inner circle of friends. And this is a couple days before Jesus dies, and this is like one of the more mission critical moments in his life, one of the more difficult moments of Jesus' mission. And the mother of these two guys, James and John, comes to Jesus with a request. And basically says, you know, Jesus, I'd like to ask you a favor. When you come into your kingdom, and she's thinking, you know, when you come into your wealth, when you come into your power, when you come into your privilege, when you come into your influence, she's like, when you come into your kingdom, would it be possible if my two sons, you know, little Jimmy and little Johnny, would it be okay if you, like, give them a place of special honor? Now imagine what the other 10 guys thought about this as they heard this request, right? I mean, you can imagine, right? I mean, they heard about this. Hey, listen, in our home, we have 4 kids, and if one of them comes to us and says, hey, Mom and Dad, you know, could I have, like, a special privilege right here? I don't know how it happens. Everybody knows about it. As soon as it's said, everybody's like, well, why are they getting a special privilege? Why didn't I get that? I mean, they bring the F word out, the fair word. I mean, that's the worst word ever, fair. It's not fair. And really what we're saying is, what about me? What about me? Why do they get the special privilege, right? Now, you probably, like me, you've had moments where you were overlooked, where somebody maybe got something above you, or maybe you were up for a job and someone else got the promotion, or perhaps there was an opportunity and you didn't get it and they did, and you're like, I don't get it. Why did they get that? I mean, we struggle with this. And we kind of constantly even judge and put ourselves in kind of a pecking order, right? Like, I get this periodical at my house. It's from my alma mater, Anderson University. It's called the Andersonian. It's kind of a monthly thing that they send out. And I don't honestly really read the whole thing. I read the back 3 or 4 pages where they list all the alumni in promotions or achievements they've had, and they're a part of this class or that class. And I look at it to see, you know, is anybody getting ahead of me? Is there anybody more successful? Are there any pastors that I was in school with that are doing better than me? And why do we do that? It's why we get on Facebook, right? We're like, oh, I see my friends, but wow, they look 20 years older than me. We're the same age, right? We're always, like, you know, evaluating, right? This is what we do. For some of you, remember the days when you had to go into the office? Like, at some point, that's going to be like cassette tapes, right? You know, you're like, kids, this is a cassette tape. And they're like, well, why did you have that? Right? Like, in 10 years, you're going to go, kids, there was a day where we went into the office. And they're like, well, why in the world would you go into the office? right? Remember when you go in the office and they kind of refurbish the office and they reseated everybody? And so as everybody got reseated, you know, you're like, oh, so-and-so, they got an office with a door, but I'm still in the cubicle. What does that mean? Are they trying to tell me something? Like, what does that mean? Or if you got the door, then it's like, well, who got the window? Or if you got the window, then like, who got the window with the view? Because that's a difference, right? Sometimes you're looking at bricks, sometimes you have view. And then like, who got the corner office? Like, what? And so we're constantly positioning, like, who's ahead, who's behind? It's crazy. It's what James and John are dealing with their friends right here. And so the other 10 guys were kind of angry, and Jesus responds, he calls them all in. He's like, come on in, guys. And he speaks to the mom first. I mean, he looks at their mom, and he says, hey, mom, listen, I know that ass probably came from a good place, but listen, guess what? You have no idea what you're asking. And then he gets all the team together. These are grown adult men. And because it's like, I don't want you being like, well, you told me this, but you told her this or him that, and I was coming, you know, they're getting more than me. He's like, I don't want any of that. So he pulls them all together, and here's what Matthew tells us happens right here. He says, but Jesus called them together. It's like a teaching moment. And he said, you know that the rulers in this world lord it over those under them, but among you, it'll be different. Guys, we operate different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first among you must be your slave. So he tells them this, and then he shows them. See, they're gathering in this room, and they're getting ready to have a dinner, a meal together. And it wasn't just any meal. It was kind of a fancy meal. It was a Passover meal. It was kind of a meal that was a part of a festival. And the 10 disciples, I mean, they're still kind of mumbling about, you know, can you believe James and John? Like, the nerve of them to ask, you know, their mom to ask if they could have the special seat. And so they're still kind of mumbling, and they come into this space, and it's customary to come into this space and then to realize that, oh my gosh, there's nobody here to clean us up. I mean, usually there was someone that was like the servant in the room, like the lowest person on the totem pole that kind of stood by the water basin and the towels to clean everybody up when they came in. And remember, in these days, they had no paved roads, right? They had no interstates. I mean, they're walking the fields. They're walking the same streets the cows walk and lay their dung on. I mean, they're walking through it all. They're walking through sewer ditches, you know, because it's open sewer flowing from houses out in, you know, through the community. And so, you know, in Jesus' day, I mean, your mode of transportation was your feet. And so, you know, when the other thing, though, that was happening right here is different than, like, if we gathered for a meal where we'd be sitting at a table with our hands and, you know, food up here and our feet way down here. They, like, sat on the floor. So they kind of sat, you know, they were kind of like a mattress type of cushion with a, if they had a table, very low table. And so, you know, they'd be sitting here and, like, so, like, my feet would be next to your face or next to your, you know, your food. And so they're realizing right here, like, there's nobody here to, like, clean up. Like, we usually have our feet cleaned. And, of course, nobody's raising their hand. Nobody's doing this number, especially because of what James and John had just kind of done, right? They're like, you know, those two guys, they went to the special place. I mean, if I'm the one that raises my hand, listen, I'm certainly not going to be at the special place, because you raise your hand, you take on the role of a servant, you take on the role of the cleaner. Listen, you're going to be pigeonholed, you're going to be the cleaner the rest of your life. And so, many of you probably heard the story before. Some of us perhaps haven't, but Jesus does it. Jesus does it. And so he gets up, and he takes a towel and a basin of water, and he begins to go around the circle, and he puts the towel over his arm and around his waist, and he serves and washes their feet. All 11 of them. Plus the one who's going to be the traitor. In a few hours, it's going to turn him over and kind of turn on him. He does all of it. And just so they don't miss the point, here's what John says about this. He says, Jesus said to them, you call me teacher and you call me Lord, and you're right, because that's what I am. And since I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you ought to wash each other's feet as I have given you, and what's the word right there? An example. So I've given you an example. All right, so, you know, he knew, like, a couple centuries later, this may not pertain to us. He says, I'm giving you an example to follow. I just want you to do what I've done to you. And so Jesus, he takes a towel, and we're still talking about it today. I mean, he takes a towel and gives us a sign, a towel, and he redefines greatness. And he says, you don't just do this practice of serving, of coming under someone to practice. He says, no, you do this to become great, to realize this is your purpose. See, his message here, what he's really telling us is if you want the strong life, you know, wanting to serve is a piece of it. That's a piece of the message. I mean, when we say, hey, I'll serve, when we raise our hands, hey, I'll serve, you know, that's part of the pathway. You're still in control when you serve, right? Because you're choosing when you do it, when you don't do it. You know, what Jesus is telling them right here is I'm calling you to something much deeper, much more radical than this. He's saying a strong life always involves surrenders. And notice surrenders with like an S on it. You have to wave the white flag. I mean, you know, when you're surrendering, you have to come over and you have to say, yep, this is where I'm at right here. This is it. I'm waving the white flag. I'm claiming the white flag. This is always the place where core strength is developed. Because, see, he knows how hard we hang on to ambition, so we put the towel over our arm. He knows how hard we want to be the best and the greatest and brand ourselves, make sure everybody knows our personal brand. So he's like, you know, you put on the towel over your arm because I know how tough it's going to be. The only way that you can get free of the worry of constantly striving after things, the only way that you can, you know, kind of get away from the craving of constantly wanting people to see how good you are, and hey, look at my brand, look at what I got, look at my Facebook, and also to be like, hey, I don't want to be taken advantage of. I mean, a lot of us are like, man, if I do that, if I take up the towel, man, somebody's going to take advantage of me. See, when you say no to all that, and you say yes to somebody else, yes to somebody else's need, yes to somebody else's agenda, yes to somebody else's reputation, I'm going to lift you up over me. I tell you what, when you do that, if you're taken advantage of, you don't care because you've already decided, like, that doesn't matter to me. And there's a freedom in that. There's a core strength that comes through that. Now, I want to give us kind of a self-assessment real quick to just kind of help us see where we are. Like, this is kind of cool. I received this a few years ago. It's kind of a spiritual spectrum to just kind of do some self-assessment. Now, the key is self-assessment, okay? So this is not like assessing your kids or your, none of this. Like, if you're with a spouse or a partner or something, don't like be like, hey, you're here, but you should be there. All right, this is like for you. So just think of yourself in this moment. All right, so here's the letters right here in front of you. All right, the first letter stands for seeker. All right, all of us are seekers at some point. We're seeking God. We're like, you know, I'm coming in. I'm like, even if you grew up in church, like I'm still trying to understand who God is, who Jesus is, who am I in relationship with Jesus, and is this someone who can be trusted? So I'm seeking information, awareness, experience. Now, when we come to the place of saying, yes, I want to receive what Jesus has for me, grace, free grace, I become a receiver. All right, and receivers have their arms out because you're receiving something, you're taking something in. Now, reminder, there's nothing you can do to earn God's grace. This is we don't earn God's grace, it's something we receive. Jesus lifted up and carried away our sin, and there's nothing you and I can do about it. All we can do is receive it. And so, you know, when we're receivers, it's actually in spite of ourselves. Sometimes we're like, yeah, God should be pretty happy I'm on his team. No. It's in spite of ourselves that we receive the grace of God because we don't deserve it. And then right here in the middle, this is interesting, there's a wall. There's a wall that we hit. And this is like a titanium brick wall, nearly impenetrable. And so on the other side of the wall is another word. And let me just say, when you're a receiver, you're a Christian. You're a believer. You're saved, if you will. You're going to heaven, not going to hell, however you like to look at it. All right, so we're in. But to get through the wall, that's more difficult. This is where we go to what's next is followers. Different receiver is different than a follower. I can receive the grace of God, but it's an entirely different thing when I begin to bend my life to Jesus, my Savior, and begin to follow him. Now, the defining step right here, defining kind of key thing, is followers have stopped negotiating with God. Followers have stopped saying, well, God, if you do this, then I'll do that. Or God, I'm not really sure I like all these things, but I will follow these things. And so you pass the BBYSS test. That's basically when you know you've become a follower. But because you say so, Jesus, this is based on when, you know, Jesus was out with Peter fishing, and Peter had been fishing all day, and they didn't catch anything, and Jesus says, hey, let's put your nets out again, and, you know, Peter's like, I'm the fisherman, you're not, why don't you leave the fishing to the fisherman, and Jesus says, just give it a try, just try it, and he's like, okay, we're not going to catch anything, but because you say so, and they haul in a load of fish like they've never seen before. See, this is when you become a follower. When it's not, you're not just saved, you're not just receiving God's grace, but you're running after emulating the heart of Jesus. You're trying to do what he does. And then the last phase, you kind of just begin to gravitate to this one over time. Once you're a follower, the last phase is what we call a sacrificial life. And when you begin following, the more you follow and seek God's heart and you're seeking to be more emulating of who Jesus is and more about his character in your life, eventually you move to the sacrificial life phase. Now it's interesting to understand that moving from one phase to the other always requires a surrender. There's got to be a white flag moment. And then the third thing about serving, why serving develops a strong life, is see, deciding to serve and being a servant are two entirely different things. Because when I raise my hand to serve, hey, I can do that. When you do that, like, you're still in control because you do it and then you don't do it. Or when I choose to give my income, give my money, God, you want me to give a tithe, 10% of my income? Really? When you're a follower, you're like, okay, I don't understand it, but because you say so, all right, I'm in. All right? And so, you know, but when you're just choosing at times, okay, I'm going to do it here but not there, then you're still in charge. So third reason, being a servant means you're not in charge anymore. You're not in charge anymore. It means I've given up my control of my time and my money and my gifts and my talents. And I'm making them available to any circumstance or person that comes in front of me at any given moment. And so the person in front of me that might come up and have a need, I see that, or, you know, I see a need within God's kingdom, his church, and I go, oh, that's a need right there, okay. We need people to serve in kids' environments so we can have kids know more about Jesus. Okay, well, listen, I'm in. My life is not mine anymore. I'm in. That's what I'm going to do. It's more important, even though I had plans over here, now that I'm following you, Jesus, I just do this because even though I had some money over here, but I see a need in my neighborhood, and this person really seems to need it, I'm going to take what I thought I was going to do with that. I'm going to put that aside because it's, like, I'm not in control anymore. I saw such a powerful, powerful example of this last weekend. In fact, it made the hair on my arm stand up. And I want to tell you about it because it's a picture of what happens when you begin to move from even following to a sacrificial life. As many of you know, and I think one of the reasons it was made so powerful is because I have a personal relationship with the people that this happened within. So, you know, we've been in this constant build as we're, you know, beginning to walk out of COVID, or at least learn to deal with it, of repopulating our ministry teams and re-engaging people and volunteering and serving. And you know, somebody last weekend, you know, said, hey, is the reason we don't have kids' environments open at every service because we don't have enough volunteers? We said, yep, that's it. We don't have enough workers. We don't have enough volunteers. And so there's slim margins. It's the same reason at the coffee bar. I mean, we have a very slim coffee bar team. It's like Starbucks. Sometimes they shut down at 2. We haven't shut down yet. But, you know, we have a very thin margins, you know, out at the coffee bar. Same on the hospitality team, the band that serves up here, the tech team. They're the workhorses that have been going through the entire pandemic every weekend. And yet they have thin ranks as well. And it's a challenge. I mean, just like the rest of the world, there's a work shortage in our world. There's a need for workers. The case is the same for us. And we're a volunteer organization primarily. So, you know, that's a whole different level. Well, nearly every weekend, we're shuffling people around in volunteer roles to fill needs that are there and gaps and to keep things open. And last weekend, we had a number of moving pieces in our kids' environments because of fall break and families traveling and some sickness that was still going through our community. And so my wife, who is the director of children's environments, she was moving some people around. She texted a couple to say, hey, I know you're serving here. You said you'd do this, you know, a couple times a month, but we might need you here, or we might even need you there. Are you guys open to, you know, wherever we might need you? And understand, this is you know, a couple who are very gifted. I mean, they could do anything. They could even, you know, serve up in this space. Maybe not sing. You know, that's maybe not in their gifted nature. But they could do a lot of things. And the thing that really caused me to go, whoa, was when they texted back and said, well, actually, one of us is sick, but the other one's going to be there, and we're going to bring our kids. And we just looked at each other and said, hey, wherever you need us, whatever's in front of you that you need us to do, we're in on that. Doesn't matter what role we said we do, we're in on that. And we're going to be there. And if you don't end up needing us, we're going to be there anyway. And as soon as I got that, I just had this moment because I've known them. They've always had a volunteer posture, but this was like a sacrificial life posture. Hey, you need something? All right, I'm in. Is there a need in front of you? All right, well, tell us what you need next. My general, God's giving me opportunities, putting them right in front of me. Okay, I'm going to do that, Jesus. And I had a goosebump moment in that moment. And it was just like, oh my gosh, God, look what you're doing. And not because we got roles filled, because of someone surrendering in a moment and beginning to shift. There's some shift that began to take sort of this sacrificial life, where I'm no longer getting my marching orders from myself or setting to myself. It's like, you're my commander, Jesus. What do you need next? What do you want to put in front of me? I'm not in charge of my life anymore. And there's many people that are making that happen in that way right now. Back to Jesus. He answered the question of why. Why should you not be in charge and make ourselves available to others? And he answers the question when he's right here washing the feet of his team. And if you don't remember the story, let me just reread a part of it. He says, I've given you an example to follow. Do as I have done to you. I'll tell you the truth. God will bless you for doing them. Now, blessed in the scriptural sense means happy, on top of the world, like an elation, a sense of full joy. Jesus promises that. He says, if you lose control, if you surrender, when you take up the white flag and you make yourself available to others, I'm telling you, there's something wonderful that begins to happen. In fact, I love how Greg Boyd, who is an author, theologian, he talks a lot about the radical life of following Jesus. He says, I've become convinced that remaining aware of God's presence, that's why the stick figure when you're in a sacrificial life is like this, arms out. I've become, when I'm remaining aware, God, what are you doing right now? Let me just see what's going on right in front. Oh, right here. Here's what you're doing right here. Being aware of God's presence is the single most important task in the life of every follower, every soldier of Jesus. He's saying, when we're aware of the person in front of us or the opportunity in front of us, and we're available with our time, our gifts, our resources, that's the most important task. He says, the only life we have to surrender is the one we're living at every single moment. And when we see little small moments, ordinary moments, I go, oh God, that's right in front of me. Okay, I have to plan to do this, but I'm going to jump in and do this right here. Those moments become sacred. I also love how he defines love. He says, love is ascribing unsurpassable worth to someone else at a cost to ourselves. He says, every time we do this, we make God's kingdom the place where Jesus reigns. Every time we do this, it makes God's kingdom a little larger. Every time we do this, it makes God's kingdom a little stronger. And guess what? You and I, we get stronger as well. So serving, we're not called to serve to solve the world's problems. We're not called to serve so we can feel good about ourselves. We're called to serve because we're in his army. And we're trying to follow the guidance and bend our lives to our commanding officer. And every time we surrender ourselves and we make ourselves available to somebody else and we come under another person and lift them up or we ascribe worth to them at a cost to ourselves, guess what? Every time we do that, God's army gets a little bigger and it gets a little stronger and it gets a little healthier because as the individual goes, so goes the team. So this week, you're going to have an opportunity to do this. And there's a few ways you can do this. Of course, we have all kinds of serving opportunities here at Crosspoint. And if you're like, man, I need to do that. I need to begin to engage and be a part of helping make things happen and serving people and bringing value and worth to kids or, you know, greeting people, whatever that is. I'm going to tell you how you can do that. You know, I have a friend who always says, hey, life is for hand raisers. A strong life is for people who raise their hands. Say, hey, count me in. I'm moving in that direction. This week, in your challenge cards, there's eight serve cards that you're gonna have the opportunity to pull. And so for your homework this week, you're gonna pull five different cards and set aside 15, 20 minutes to do that challenge. It's gonna be a serving challenge, and then reflect on it. Because see, this is a pathway to a surrendered life, and a surrendered life is a strong life. So you're gonna have the chance to do this week. Now, before we do any of that, I just wanna ask this. I wanna give us a moment to do a little reflection. I want to kind of end with a moment of reflection. And what I want you to reflect on is this question right here. God, where is my next surrender? What's the next thing that you're inviting me to surrender on? And in light of where you are on this continuum, we're going to put this back up. I want you to just focus in on where you are. Where do you self-identify that you're at in this seeker to receiver to follower to sacrificial life continuum? And God is always moving and always inviting to the next place. And so today, I just want you to consider what would it take for me to make one move to the right? What would it take for me to make one move to the next phase? I mean, if you're somebody who's been seeking and you've been here asking questions and trying to figure out who Jesus is, and you've been getting maybe some answers and experiencing things and beginning to get a picture of his character and his grace and how he runs after you and pursues you and loves you, maybe perhaps you're at the place of saying, I'm ready to take the step of receiving his grace. Right, so in this moment, maybe your surrender is, okay, Jesus, I'm going to receive you. I'm not asking you to go to the end of the continuum right away, just one step to the right. Maybe that's your step today. If you've received the grace of God and you're like, man, I'm a Christian. I've received the grace of God. I'm going to be in eternity in heaven with him one day. But you've not taken the step of saying, okay, I'm done negotiating, Jesus. But because you say so is not part of your vocabulary, then maybe that's your next step. Maybe it's time to start breaking through that titanium wall to becoming a follower. And there's some things that he's putting on your heart right now to surrender, to say, you know what? This is actually for your good. Will you trust me enough to surrender and begin to follow, not just have received my grace, but to follow? Or perhaps you're a follower. You've been a follower, and you've been chasing after and emulating the heart of the character of Jesus and growing in that, which is, you know, someone's been doing this for years. I've been doing this for years. But now you're like, you know, there's still a deeper level I can go to. What's the thing God may be putting in your heart to surrender, to go to the deeper place, to the sacrificial life? So we're just going to give you a moment right here to just surrender, for just sit, reflect, listen, because this is where the strong life gets developed. And so I just want you to kind of listen to the words, just respond to the promptings God puts on your heart.